it was during my investment banking time where I kind of had this idea of making these normal shirts, I was calling them. That's where the normal brand came from.
Well, hello, and welcome to another edition of the E-Commerce Evolution Podcast. I'm your host, Brett Curry, CEO of OMG Commerce. And today we have a How I Did It, How We Built It story. I can't wait to dive into this. I'm visiting with Jimmy Sansone of the Normal brand, a brand I've been following for years now. Love what they offer, love their clothing, love their style, love their logo, love the story. And so we're going to unpack kind of how this came to be and how they did it and what they learned along the way and what it's like working with family and all kinds of really fun stuff. We'll see what's next for the Normal brand as well. So lots of good stuff to unpack here. Jimmy, welcome to the show, man. And thanks for taking the time.
Thanks for having me, Brett. Excited to be on.
Yeah, really pumped about this. One, because I love the clothing and I am wearing a Normal brand shirt, which I will say, I feel comfortable in this shirt. I also feel powerful in this shirt. So it's like it's a great mix. And I'm probably going to be like 30 to 50% more interesting wearing this shirt. So I got to thank you for that.
If you could write that down as a review, we'll repurpose it as an ad and that'll be great.
we'll just chop this up. I'll send it to you, and you guys can use it. So that's awesome. But I, in all seriousness, love the shirt. Love what you guys are doing. It's funny. I got on your SMS list somehow, email list. I signed up for it somehow, some way. And then you guys opened a store in my hometown, Springfield, Missouri. Talking to a buddy of mine who owns the local barbershop. He's like, "Oh man, Normal brand. They're from St. Louis, and they've got a huge family." I'm like, "I got to meet these guys." And so that's how we connected. But this is one of those rare scenarios. And one day I'd love to meet your parents because they are one of the few that have more kids than my wife and I have. So my wife and I famously have 8 kids. But Jimmy, you come from an even bigger family. So tell us the size of your family and tell us what it was like growing up in this dynamic family.
Yeah, I'm the oldest of 10 kids. So I have 9 siblings, got 40 something or above 40 cousins. So I have a huge extended family, and now they have their own, kids. And so the generations keep getting bigger and bigger. A ton of fun. It was like growing up on a team. We played team sports our whole life, but really when you're kind of born on a team, I wouldn't have it any other way. And I think it teaches you a lot of life lessons. I think it teaches you how to, get along with people, management, things like that. And so, childhood was awesome. And still to this day, my siblings are my best friends. So it's a great blessing.
I love it, man. And that's my hope. That's my prayer for my kids, like that they'll remain close. But I heard another guy talk about, he comes from a big family as well, say that, kids of big families, they don't grow up thinking it's all about them because it can't be. They're like too many other kids and too many other priorities. It's not just all about one kid. And so I think that environment can really shape character and make you a unique individual, but also someone that appreciates the team and appreciates the whole, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I think definitely you've got to learn humility. It's not all about you. And frankly, you're judged on kind of how you treat your siblings, because it's making life better for your parents, really, is what we should have been trying to do when we were older and sometimes, or when we were younger, and sometimes we did, sometimes we didn't. But yeah, super blessed with our
parents. Now, I'm going to clip that part and show that to my kids.
Yeah, right.
So thank you for that.
That's not now we're But yeah, our parents were just incredible, just phenomenal role models. And, kind of really showed us the way and how to do things. And so, it wasn't very hard. It was pretty easy.
That's amazing, man. So do you guys still get together for dinner, like family dinners on a somewhat regular basis?
Oh yeah. If you miss Sunday dinner, you've got real problems. And, I live like 5 minutes from my parents' house. So, I'm over there. We work out together, a lot of us. So we've got an 18-year-old brother who's a senior in high school. So we go to all of his games. Like we're at
He's a quarterback, right? Plays football.
He plays football and then he plays lacrosse. He's playing lacrosse right now. And so those sports definitely keeps us together. But if we go even a day or two without seeing our parents, that's an odd couple of days.
Love it, man. Love it, man. The Sansones are my role model. So hopefully we can do something similar in the Curry household. Curious now, you're an entrepreneur. It sounds like most of your family, they're entrepreneurs. Did that come from your parents? And if so, kind of how?
Absolutely. Or even before them, our grandparents were entrepreneurs also big time. And so, they definitely inspired us. We were very tight with them. So my dad's dad kind of came from nothing. His parents were immigrants, and he built a great business, and we got to see kind of like what he had built. And then there was a family rule where the third generation is not allowed in the in that business, which was really a great blessing because it gave us the ability to kind of think on our own and kind of, you know, what are the things we want to do. But since the time I was maybe like 12 years old, our parents really kind of encouraged us to think outside the box entrepreneurially. So when I was 12, me and my brother Conrad started a sports camp. That summer camp continues to this day. My youngest siblings run it. It was basically like glorified babysitting, but that was something that I did every single summer until I graduated college. In high school, I sealed driveways. In college, during like exam time, we sold poinsettias, like the Christmas flower. And so it was those types of like, and then post school, I went into investment banking. But I would say that those little ventures that we had earlier taught me more than banking for a few years did, and definitely kind of shaped the type of people we are, and helped influence Normal Brand in a lot of ways.
That's so cool, man. And so just help me understand. And this sounds awesome. So the third generation not allowed in the family business with the motivation to say, man, get out and build your own thing, do your own thing.
That's right. Yeah. I think there's my grandfather was a very, very thoughtful guy. He passed away a few years ago in 2020 and April of 2020, but they're just statistics kind of tell it all. Like, I think when you get to third generation family businesses, it's like single digit percentages of those that prosper. And even there, there's still, so you break apart companies, you break apart families. It was never worth that risk. And so we knew that from the time.
It's really smart.
Yeah, it was really smart. And so we knew that as a time from a young age. And, you know, it really gave us the, and then being able to have a front seat of like a family business. It's a family business that my dad, my uncles are in, that my grandfather started. But being able to have a front seat to see how that works and how it works well, it helped us so much. And so, and that lifestyle of kind of like, you know, we talk about work kind of all the time now, and we grew up with that as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I really enjoy that. And I've got a couple of close family members extended who are in business, and we always get together and strategize and talk business. I'm actually the first in my close family to be an entrepreneur, which I don't know where it came from, but it just happened, and I love it. But I'm trying to foster that environment for my kids. So we'll see. There's a couple of them that are definitely leaning that way. So as you started these ventures throughout your childhood and kind of the teen years, what was your parents' role in that? Were they kind of cheering from the sideline? Were they giving you direct advice? Were they just kind of standing back and watching and stepping in as needed? Or what was that like?
I think first it was just from a practical standpoint. I think the beginning, the impetus for it all, I asked for a gift of some sort. I think it was like a bike. And my dad just said, sure, you got any money? And I was like 12. And I said, no. And he said, okay, we'll go get a job. And then at that point, you're too young to get a job anywhere. And so he said, okay, start something with one of your brothers. And so he's like, you got all these siblings, why don't you start a camp? So I think even from that, I mean, a long time ago, 25 years ago, he helped even just kind of ideate and encourage us. Yeah, you can do this, you know, just kind of think outside the box. And so I think just encouraging that mindset from a very young age, you probably can't overstate enough how much that has helped.
That's amazing. Okay, so fast forward a little bit. So you get into investment banking, which is a world that I respect. I've been kind of on a journey over the last couple of years, meeting private equity groups and learning M&A and investing and doing different things. And so fascinating world. Was kind of the goal to be, you know, career investment banker, or did you kind of always view that as a stepping stone to then kind of launch your own thing?
I always knew that I would eventually work for myself. Or hopefully with my brothers. That was a goal from the time. I mean, I think it's written down when I was like in high school. But I didn't really know what that meant, honestly. And so I would say it was during my investment banking time where I kind of had this idea of making these normal shirts, I was calling them. That's where the Normal brand came from. And it was this idea of something comfortable, well-fitting, durable, and versatile was kind of like the three main pillars at the beginning. And so I started getting these shirts made. People were asking me about them. And I was like, well, maybe more people would want these. So I quit my job.
And was the idea because you didn't have a shirt that you fell in love with, or you'd kind of always been drawn to fashion? Or
yeah, I was pretty. Yeah, I had a big passion for clothing my whole life. Again, kind of inspired by my grandpa and my dad. So, you know, in the 90s, right, they were all wearing suits to work, like really buttoned up. And so when I was like 16, I remember I asked for a custom suit. So like the formal wear was like a big thing, but I loved clothes and just, you know, I'd lay out my outfits. I think about how does this color work. I'd really kind of shop with my hands. So when I go into stores, I was really, really into clothes. I also kind of had a creative inkling. I like, you know, drawing and writing and doing other things. But honestly, the idea of being in fashion for a profession never even came into my mind ever. It was never even a consideration. I thought maybe real estate or like, you know, I went into finance, business, stuff like that. Like anything else was kind of like stupid talk. But it wasn't until I was in banking and kind of had this idea. And again, I remember talking to my dad and he was like, yeah, you can do it. Why don't you just, you know, give it a shot? And so I think that kind of confidence that they would instill in us was phenomenal.
It's amazing. It's amazing. So that was 2015-ish, right? You're making these shirts. People saying they love them, and you go for it, and you start in the basement, right? Basement of your house is where you're either making clothes or packing them and shipping them or whatnot. So talk about those early days.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I was it actually took me a few years to kind of figure it out. So I left my job in 2012. Didn't sell my first shirt to 2015. So there were some kind of, I would say that I wasn't, I had to do some growing up in those times, in that 3 years. But finally got to the point where it was like, I put myself in a position where it was like kind of back against the wall, like, you know, it's either do it or don't. And that was a really important thing to kind of get it going, I think. And then I saw progress. And then once you saw progress, then you could kind of believe in it a little bit. And so, but yeah, we were, I had a bunch of mistakes on the initial. I didn't know anything. Like I didn't know what a tech pack was or what, you know, how to work with factories or how, you know, you could Google as much as you want, but I was trying to get these made and man, these shirts were coming in really busted up. I had my one that was good for myself and I couldn't make any others for anybody else. So it's sort of a disaster. So I actually started with hats. So the first thing that I ever sold was March 10th, 2015. And we launched with some hats to get some money in the door. To pay for our first deposit for our first run of cut and sew, which came in August of 15. My brothers joined me and then we kind of, you know, it was more of a business and then this kind of like glorified lemonade stand.
Nice. And so you start with hats because they were easier to produce, easier to get like a quality product.
Yes. And that was, there were some people, some mentors that encouraged me to do that. And I also needed some capital to kind of, to literally pay for a deposit to get the first run of shirts. You know, I didn't know, you know, there's big MOQs, minimum order quantities, things like that. It was a lot of money to kind of do this. I just didn't have that. And so this was a way to kind of get the name out. Hey, this is what's coming in a few months, but this is the brand. This is the story. I got super lucky that brands like Shopify were coming about like right around this time. So I was able to build a website for like nothing really, like really, really cheap. And even, you know, I'm not a coder or anything. I don't know how to do any of that stuff, but I can drag and drop a picture. And so I got really lucky that things like that were happening. And then also just kind of like utilizing my siblings and our family network of people sharing things for me, because I wasn't running any ads or anything like that. We were able to sell out of our hats a few times. And then I was like, okay, maybe this is a thing. I got enough money for the deposit. And then we had to wait a few months, but then you start selling again.
Yeah, that's amazing. And so in the early days, were a lot of your sales in person, like through the family network, or were most of them online or combination?
Oh yeah. I think, I know this guy, I wrote a thing on it. 102 people bought on the first day. I think I personally knew like 85. I mean, maybe,
yeah, that's awesome. You know, that's awesome, man.
And so, yeah, I mean, it's a phenomenal thing to have, you know, like your tribe kind of like come out. So it was family, it was friends. Sometimes I'll go back and I'll look at those names. It's like, God, I forget. Yeah, he did that. Like, you know, even distant friends and stuff like that. But those are things that you don't really forget when people step up, when you're in a vulnerable position, you know, you're starting something, it's a public thing. It could really go poorly or it can go great and you'll never forget those people. So I got really lucky with 102, from day one in 2015.
It's amazing, man. And that's what I've heard. I've heard the advice from, hey, if you're a friend of an entrepreneur, you know, don't take their product as a gift. Go buy it. Yeah. Buy it at retail. Buy it at full price. Leave a review. Like help them out. If you want to be a friend, that's how you're a friend to an entrepreneur. Buy their stuff. And it sounds like, yeah, a lot of people do that, which is amazing. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about working with family, because this is a unique thing. And I've always, like, I've tried to recruit my wife to work for me, and she's busy, you know, raising a bunch of kids and doing other things. So she hasn't, but I love the idea of working with family. But curious, like, when is it really great and when is it challenging? And share with us some insights there.
Well, I think business partners are super important, regardless of if it's family or not. So if you just think about business partners, like, what do you want? You know, I think you want somebody that you can depend on no matter what. I think you want someone that you can be radically honest with and fight with and get over it. And I think you want someone that's as incentivized as you are to kind of perform and takes as much pride, right? Like you want to make sure that when you hand something off to your business partner, like you can forget about it. And so I'm just lucky that I have those in my two brothers. I have all of those qualities. So that it just makes for phenomenal business partners. I think that definitely we had kind of an unfair advantage in that we were able to grow up with a front seat to another family business. And so you can kind of learn, you know, what to do, what not to do, learn from great successes, learn from things that didn't go according to plan. And so not to say that we're perfect, but for the reason I stated at the beginning on what you look for in a great business partner, I mean, that's what I have in my brothers. And then you go a step further where it's like, I would literally die for them. That it makes it, you know, it makes going to business. It's like, okay, like sales are down a little bit. Like we'll be okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love that perfectly aligned incentives, right? You're all trying to accomplish the same thing. You grew up in a family that communicated and hung out together and spent time together. So you're able to communicate clearly. I think in some ways, a lot of the reason families can't work together in business is because they're maybe dysfunctional outside of business, right? So like if you can't be close as a family outside of business, you're not able to do it in business either. And so growing up, being able to communicate, able to do things, run projects, run summer camps with your siblings, I'm sure made that transition to another business much more doable.
Yeah. And I think we read, you know, books about company culture and stuff like that on trying to learn on best practices, irregardless of family business or whatever it is. And so I think we try to take, there's still so much that we can learn and try to learn as much as we can. But I mean, those best practices, I think you said a lot of it, but it's like, you know, direct communication, passive aggressiveness is kind of like a killer, right? So like try to keep that out. Ego is a killer. So having a healthy dose of humility. So, I don't know if these Patrick Lencioni books, we're big on those.
Yeah, dude, I'm a huge Patrick Lencioni fan. Yeah. Love the At the Table podcast. We did, I'm curious if you guys have done this too, the six types of your working genius.
We just sent it to all of our people. So they're all doing their tests right now. Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. So what are your working geniuses? Just curious.
I've got to go back and look at it. I remember I was like, I don't remember all of them. And I was like, oh man, is that really what I'm like? And it really is. But I forget what they all are now. I did mine like
that. Yeah, it's harder. I had to look at it several times, but I'm a galvanizer and a wanderer. Okay. So galvanizer, like I can rally the troops, you know, I coach sports, like I can get people fired up and excited. But then the wanderer is like, you always asking, well, what if we did this? What if we, you know, and so I dream a little bit too. So that combination can be great. It can also drive my team crazy and my family as well. But that's where it's been so helpful for us, like just understanding even with our leadership group, like, okay, what are your working geniuses? Well, this is why we don't communicate clearly in these meetings, because I'm trying to wonder and you're trying to be tenacious and get stuff done. Anyway, yeah, super helpful tool.
Yeah, he actually, so we've been reading him literally since like 2015, and the craziest thing happened. I had never met him. He shopped Normal Brand and then had a great interaction with our customer service. And he wrote a note in and saying, like, you know, like giving a shout out to Colby D, our head of customer service. She sent it to us. And I was like, no way, Patrick Lencioni. I reached out to him. And now he and I have talked like a few times. He's going to do some like consulting with us and do like
amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing. Crazy how that kind of stuff can happen.
Yeah, we attend the Global Leadership Summit almost every year. Not sure if you've ever done that, but he whenever he speaks, he's my favorite guy. Like he's my favorite presenter. So what a cool deal, man. That's the sign you guys are doing stuff right. If Patrick Lencioni's impressed, that's a good sign. Yeah. Good sign for sure. So cool. So when then is it challenging to work with family? And just curious, any insights there?
Well, I think we're all very much alike. So, you know, there sometimes when you can get frustrated, everybody can get frustrated because you're frustrated about the same stuff. And so it's not like, oh, this guy's like that, but this guy kind of, you know, calms you down a little bit. Like we can kind of be at the same level at the same time. But the great news with that is once we fight, which happens 20 minutes later, we're fine. And so there's a good balance to it because we've been doing it our whole lives anyways.
Yeah, and then there's no question like, do we love each other? Yes. Yeah. Do we have each other's back? Yes.
Is he coming back to the office? Yes. I mean, it's all those things, yeah.
But we can fight about this one thing.
Yeah.
And that's actually, and that's another Patrick Lencioni thing. This wasn't designed to be the Patrick Lencioni podcast, but it's becoming that a little bit, where he's like, good meetings should have tension, right? If you're in a meeting with leadership or with your executive team and there's no tension, there's no disagreement ever, something's wrong.
Right.
Either the meeting's not necessary or somebody's not necessary that's there. Like, there should be a little bit of tension. And so having that is super productive.
Yeah.
So cool, man. Well, let's talk about store expansion. So your online experience is great. I know we skipped a lot of years there, but you grew online from the site you developed on or that you built on Shopify, and now you got a beautiful site. But when did you kind of make that decision to launch your own retail stores, and why your own store versus just selling through traditional retail?
We started online, and then we got into wholesale really heavy. And wholesale, okay, meaning like sell through other retailers, that was a majority of our business for a year or two. And then the online kind of caught up. But I think it was through that wholesale expansion where we were able to see like really, great performing retailers. We were able to also see ones that failed. You know, you could kind of and learn things about what made, one store in one town great and another store across town not good, right? Like what's the difference?
And were you guys selling all over the country or was it more kind of in the Midwest initially?
Yeah, all over the country. Yeah. Like Southeast, Northeast, Midwest, and some West Coast too, but a lot in the Southeast, Northeast, Midwest. I mean, we're in like 400 some odd doors right now. And so wholesale is still a big part of our business, but we got to definitely learn a lot. And then, I mean, to have a major brand, which we want to have, you have to have your own stores. And, there's only so much of your brand that you can experience in somebody else's store or even online. Whereas, to walk through a physical space, we do as many meetings at our stores as we can, like with people to kind of, if we want them to really kind of understand who we are, because it's really like you're walking through something that was once just in your mind, right? In the physical space. And so, so our first one we opened in August of 2019. In St. Louis. And that's been voted best men's store like a few years in a row. And
it's amazing.
Then 2020 happened. So we kind of like, we were about to do one, and then the pandemic happened. So we were like, okay, let's hang on. And then we opened our first out of town one in August of 21 in Nashville. And my brother Conrad really runs like all of our store expansion. My brother Lan runs all of our wholesale stuff. So it's really like, those guys being able to kind of like take it and run with it, and me kind of working on product and some of the creative stuff is a really good balance. But yeah, once we proved that the store could kind of like, cause we're like, okay, well, will people buy it outside of St. Louis? And then we saw that it performed really well in Nashville, and we're like, okay, let's go. And so last year we opened 5 stores. So we're up to 11 now. We'll open a few more this year. And yeah, it's been a great venture for us.
So cool. What are some of the benefits that you think you've gained from having your own store? And I will attest to, because there's one here in Springfield. I've shopped it a couple of times. It's just got such an amazing look and feel. Oh, and I also want to ask, did I read that your mom designed the stores, or was Key instrumental in designing the stores?
Yeah, big time. Yeah. She's a key part of kind of like the overall design, the aesthetic. She helps us like source these crazy antiques from all over the place to kind of really give it that extra level. She was big on, hey, it's got to smell a certain way.
Yeah.
Our mom is a beast.
That's amazing. That's amazing. So what all are the benefits from owning your own stores? Like, what are some of the probably obvious benefits, but maybe some of the unexpected benefits, intangibles, things like that?
Yeah, I think unexpected may be that you really get on the customer service standpoint, on the customer service side, when you meet with our people there, we really want it to feel like it's an extension of our family. It's an extension of the, and so, we want people to feel like it's, a second home. We want them to feel at home, like they're a part of the family and walking in. So I think that there's a ton of training that we do on our side. I mean, thick handbooks and kind of like a lot of formulaic stuff to kind of make that be a thing. Like, you're going to be greeted within 2.5 steps of walking into our store. You're going to be offered a drink within 3.5 steps, right? It's like, it's things like that, that from a training standpoint, but then manifests itself in hopefully like a real authentic way. But we want people to kind of experience the brand in all the senses, right? So we want them to be able to touch the clothes, smell it. Hopefully it's a great smell. We've got candles burning from sound wise. We've got good music on, you know, be able to try on the clothes, of course. But I think it just gives you a chance to kind of have a real personal connection. And what's really cool is we've seen that our managers and team members at these stores have been able to foster like these great relationships with the local community, where like they'll text, they'll have dinner with them and things like that. So, you know, it's a little bit different in that we're trying to be a part of the fabric of that community wherever this store is. And so, you know, it's an extension of our brand getting a lot more local.
Yeah. Yeah. And you guys do an excellent job of it. And even like the partnership here in Springfield with Hudson Hawk Barbers, yeah. Like you're connecting with other local brands that are a good fit for your brand. And yeah, it's just a good experience, man. And it feels like you're kind of stepping into your catalog, and you have beautiful photography, and the furniture just feels cool and looks cool. And I, you know, I've got pretty long arms. I've got pretty broad shoulders. So I wanted to come in and try a few things on. Ended up buying online, but it was great just to be in there touching and feeling. And I remember when my executive assistant who helped kind of structure and organize the podcast, he's like, I went to the mall and I went to the Normal brand store and it's amazing. Like he was going on and on about it because he experienced it in person.
Yeah.
And so that's cool. Did you see other parts of your business accelerate once you started opening stores, and once you got to a tipping point of stores? Like, did online take off more? Did other areas take off more? Just any interesting insights there?
Both. Yeah. So we actually saw, so wholesale, you know, you would get, maybe you would get worried, like if you open a store in a town where you've got a wholesaler, like another retailer that you're selling through, like a third party, is that going to hurt their business? And we were very sensitive to that because we, you know, like we really came up through wholesale and online, but through wholesale. So like, we would bend over backwards for our wholesale partners and still will. And whether it's showing up for trunk shows or showing up, oh, hey, this wasn't right. Like, okay, let me swap you out of that. Let me get you this. So my brother Lan really kind of spearheads that, and he just does a phenomenal job. He can be kind of like everywhere at once. But we were worried about those stores. And what we found was that in cities where we open a store, our other retailers that are there actually do better, which was awesome. I think it's just the name gets out there, and then their customers are shopping there and they're like, oh yeah, I know what that is. Let me grab this. So our business got better within those, which is awesome. And on the online side, the same thing happened. You know, we have found that in the markets where we have a store, our online presence grows. Those people come shop in a store, you know, it's a high percentage of them will buy online later. So it's a good kind of customer acquisition tool as well.
Totally makes sense. And did you have any of those retail partners that were a little bit resistant at first? Like, hey, we don't really want you opening a store in our town,
yes,
type of thing?
Absolutely. You know, there were some uncomfortable conversations for sure. But we were very direct about it and very honest about it. And we said, just hold on, just wait, see what this does to your business. Because we had done a bunch of research and talked to other brands and things like that. It's not just unique to us. That happens. And then, you know, then it's always a great thing where after a season or two and you have the conversation, they're like, you're right, that, you know, we're killing it out with you guys. Like,
yeah. Yeah. And now you've got the data. Now you got the proof. You go to the next city. Yeah. Now you can really tell this compelling story to your retail partners, your wholesale partners, that, hey, this is going to be a good
thing.
And
we still go. We actually still go to, like, whether it's trunk shows or events at those retailers, like where my brother will show up or whatever, and promote their store. Like they're a very important part of our business.
That's awesome. So really, we're going a little bit out of chronological order here, but so you in the very early days, like wholesale was a staple of the business. Would you say, was that like the majority of the business in the early days?
For sure.
Got it. And was that like, did you identify that as kind of the best path to take it, or you knew that online was going to take some time to build up, so you wanted to go wholesale, or what drove that initiative?
It was a need. It was a capital need. You know, we were a bootstrap business. And so we had to order all this inventory because of MOQs, things that we talked about earlier. So we had to get on a schedule where we could sell that stuff, pre-book is what we call it, like 9 months in advance, because we didn't think we could sell it all online, but we had to buy it. So we were like, okay, where else can we sell this stuff? Where they're like, and somebody said, hey, you should go to this trade show. So the first trade show we ever went to was called the Chicago Men's Collective. It's our biggest trade show by far. I mean, we'll be booked for like every single day, like morning till night. But that's where we met kind of our first retailers. And we wouldn't have had a company without the wholesale business because we wouldn't have been able to sell the inventory online. And from a cash flow perspective, we wouldn't have been able to pay for the good for the inventory.
Yeah. Yeah, it totally makes sense. That's so cool. So cool. Well, you guys have done so much right. Clothes are awesome. Store experience is fantastic. Online shopping is good. Even the text marketing is good. The SMS marketing is good. But what have you learned from failures, right? Because we all trip ourselves up as entrepreneurs and make mistakes. And like those can be the best learning tools. So what mistakes have you learned from along the way?
Oh, man, tons. You know, I think we've as the business has grown, we have more people now on the team. And so I know that's where we manage a lot more people than we ever have. So there's tons of failures there where, you know, it's not just enough to just kind of like, okay, lead by example. And there'll be, no, there needs to be like processes and, you know, well thought out structures of how this is going and how that's going. So there's, you know, as the business evolves and matures, you need to kind of mature with it, with kind of your procedures. So I would say we'd be here for a long time to tell you how many times we've kind of like failed there. But I think the one thing that we've done, we've always had a good culture. We kind of knew that from the beginning. Yeah. So we've always had a good culture. So that can kind of make up for some of the procedural things that go wrong. But just building processes and things like that. I would say that with that, like, you know, with store expansion and things like that, you know, you have to kind of, it radically changes the way you do business. So even like getting inventory to the store on time, making sure it's merchandised appropriately. Let's make sure we're getting them the right inventory. Well, this store actually behaves differently than this store in a big way. And so I think that we've had to add people to the team who can kind of specialize in these different verticals, but we're the type where we make the mistake first and then try to fix it.
In some ways that allows you to go faster, right? Yeah. Like make a mistake, fix it, iterate, rather than trying to get it perfect out of the gate, which you'll never do anyway. Let's talk a little bit about culture, and we're big believers in culture as well. We, you know, been fortunate enough. We won best workplaces through Inc. 3 years. We won the number one place to work in our area, 417, Biz 417, won number one 2 years in a row, which is awesome.
Wow, that's insane.
But we'd love to hear like thank you. What's your approach to culture? Like, what do you guys think about? How do you approach it?
Yeah, I mean, we build it. So we have like, let's just take it out. We've got like culture cards kind of on what our core values are. While I fish that out. Yeah, so we build it basically off three core values. And this is a Patrick Lencioni ripoff. And we're not afraid to say that. But humble, hungry, and smart are kind of our the main
Love
three
it.
Things.
Love it.
I would say that humility is what I would rank number one. With coming to this business, with just the way the business was started, with really kind of no experience in it and making a lot of mistakes, you can't afford to have an ego. And so I think that ego kills all teamwork. And the simple like transaction of, hey, my bad, I messed it up, I'm sorry. And equally as important on the other side is all good, let's move on, right? Like that transaction is like grease on the wheels for a team to move forward. So that's a super important thing. The other, so that we all carry one of these with like the core values, but
it's awesome.
Positivity, ownership, solution driven, humble, and hungry.
So good.
That's kind of how we build it out. But if I was to pick one, kind of does depend on the role, I guess. But I would say that an ego doesn't have a place within our teamwork.
Yeah. So good. Have you read the book Ego is the Enemy by Ryan Holiday?
That's awesome. Yeah.
So good. Yeah. Love all his books.
Yeah. I've gone down stoicism path for like a year. I was reading them all. He had me reading Marcus Aurelius.
So good, man. I've got the Daily Stoic, which is that's really good. And actually, I think Discipline is Destiny. That may be my favorite book.
I read that too.
That's awesome. His. I love all of them, but that may be my favorite. But yeah, similar culture values here, actually. So our kind of core three, we think and act like owners, right? Yep. So we take ownership in what we do. We constantly help each other level up, or we constantly improve. And then we have fun solving problems. And so we kind of want to have this attitude of like, hey, every problem is an opportunity for something, right? Okay. And so we talk about that. And we would talk about owning our stuff good and bad and giving transparent feedback. And so those things, when you communicate those things clearly, then you're living it out from top to bottom. And then when you're hiring based on culture first and skills and aptitudes second, just eventually that culture kind of permeates. Now, it doesn't take much to puncture that culture, to start to lose that culture. So you got to be really, really vigilant. But man, when you've got a solid culture, you know, I've heard the old saying, culture eats strategy for breakfast, or whatever that saying is. And it is true. Like, if you've got the right culture, people will solve problems.
Yeah, I had a good friend who who's got a big, like HVAC company. He's got a ton of employees and, known him since high school. And he actually gave us some ideas on, and we've got like note cards with, like with the different core values on it, like one each, and then how it's demonstrated. And then we task our managers with, like once a month, giving one of these cards out with a note on it to somebody in their team that demonstrated that core value. So like find the good. So we really try to like, you know, an emphasis on finding the good. And of course you can coach people up or whatever on when it's not being demonstrated, but giving a shout out to when it is demonstrated, I think reinforces how important it is.
Yeah. Finding the good. And I love that. It's a simple call out, right? Here's a card, culture card, but you exemplified this. You model this. That has so much meaning. I remember when I was in college, I worked at Lowe's and I worked in the plumbing department, right? I'm like, yeah. I'm not handy at all, but I learned enough about plumbing to be somewhat helpful. So I was good at customer service. I was good at talking to people. And so I helped this dude out and he's like, I'm going to tell your manager. And so he did, but my manager like immediately walked over, gave me a gift card to some restaurant. I don't remember what it was, but I will never forget that interaction. When seeing my boss walk up and say, you did an awesome job, handed me the card, which is great, right? So made me want to work even harder.
If you walk around our office, you can see on the different, our team members will keep these cards like on their desk, like showing them. So yeah, it's a cool thing.
That's
again, not
cool,
an original
man.
Idea cool. at all.
A lot of times the best ideas are not original, right? And that's one of those where I think being an entrepreneur, like you just borrow good ideas from where you learn them and apply them. And it's more about the application, the execution, rather than like coming up with brand new ideas that really sets you apart. So that's awesome. What's next, man? So what's next for Normal Brand? I know there's probably some top secret stuff you can't talk about, but what can you share with us? What's on the roadmap ahead?
You know, I think our merchandising strategy is definitely, product is what I love, right? Like there's no better feeling to me. Like I'm staring at you and you're wearing one of our shirts. I'm making sure it's draping right and things like that. So like I love clothes. And so I can't talk about anything with Normal Brand without talking about like what we've got coming up. We're always a few seasons ahead, right? Like I'm thinking fall 25 right now, but fall 24, I would say, just with the new fabrics we've got coming out and the merchandising strategy of giving kind of people more what they want and having, we've got the data behind it where we can make a lot more educational, decisions on this. It's not as much gut. It used to be like, I don't know. I mean, like I like this. Like, you think they'll like it, right? That's how it used to be. And so I'm pumped about the collections we have coming. I'm also excited about some of the different, some of the different initiatives we've got at our stores. I think we're really getting out with the community and connecting with the community. And we're, onboarding a bunch of new people that hopefully make that experience, make people's days better. So I don't know if there's like one thing. I'm always excited about the future.
Yeah. And usually it's a lot of little things, right? And one thing I'll kind of mention, because I think this ties into the physical store thing. Shopped at Supplement Superstore a couple times. And actually, I think you know the owner, right?
Yeah,
he's a St. Louis guy as well.
Yeah.
So I, the first time I went in, the store's been here forever, right? I think he opened it when MSU or whatever, opened the store. So I went in, talked to this girl. She must've been in college or whatever. Told her kind of what I was working out and my family working out and stuff. And so I picked a product. I bought it, kind of end of story. I get a card like 2 days later from this girl that helped me. She's like, hey, hope workouts are going good with your wife and your daughter. We sometimes go to the gym together and stuff. And it was just really cool, man. So it was an awesome experience. So I was like, well, can't buy this online now. I gotta go back to the store. Cause so now every time I go to the store, I get a handwritten thank you card that says something about the interaction that we had. So, those little touches, man.
We copied off them in that. We do that. So anytime you shop our stores, you get a handwritten note that gets sent out by the next day. Those guys, Supplement Superstores, First Form, total studs, an incredible culture, a great product. They've been phenomenal friends.
First Form is really good. Like I would have just like skipped the store if I didn't like the product. Product is really good. So I keep buying it. And the in-store experience was awesome.
Yeah, we've got it all here.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Really, really cool. So pay attention to Normal Brand. I encourage you to shop for it or shop for it for your husband or significant other, whoever. Check out the website. Get on their email list and SMS list. That's one of the things that I do if there's a brand that I really like and admire. Even if don't plan on buying something, I'll get on their email list and just kind of check out what they're doing. And so you guys do a great job there as well. So how else can people connect with you, Jimmy? I see you're somewhat active on LinkedIn. Are you active on any other socials?
Yeah, I'm like somewhat learning LinkedIn. Instagram, we're on Instagram at the Normal Brand. And those are kind of the big ones.
Cool. Yeah. And I notice you don't post like all the time on LinkedIn, but when you do, it packs a punch.
That's what I'm saying.
So you guys celebrated.
Yeah.
And just celebrated 9 years, right? So you said your 9 year anniversary post.
Yeah. I always get my feelings on those anniversaries. So yeah, that was I just did a post talking about our parents, which,
that'll mess. It was really good, man. Really good. Worth going to LinkedIn to read that. If you enjoyed this story, go check out the post and I think you'll really, really enjoy it. So Jimmy, this was awesome, man. We'll have to do this again sometime and really appreciate it.
Thank you, Brett. Thanks for having me on. And this is a lot of fun.
Absolutely. And as always, thank you for tuning in. We'd love to hear from you. We love that review on iTunes if you got value out of this. Also, share this story. If you know another founder, you know someone else in fashion or D2C or trying to break into retail or something, share this episode with them and let the Sansones inspire more people. And with that, until next time, thank you for listening.